Welcome to Media Mavens,
a bi-weekly podcast where we discuss our favorite
or not so favorite
movies, shows, and games.
I'm Pam.
I'm Riley.
Let's get started.
Welcome to episode 6 of Media Mavens. I'm Riley, and I'm here as always with my co-host Pam.
Hello.
This week is a little different because it is just Pam and I. We had some guests in mind, and then the timing just didn't work out, so we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff that we have done. And it should be interesting because we got a lot of questions from everybody that was listening, so we'll have a lot to talk about. I guess, Pam, if you want to start us off with what you've been doing since the last time we were talking?
Sure. So after our last episode, I started a new playthrough of Dragon Age Inquisition, which I blame you for.
And that's fair.
A few other people too, but mostly you. I thought I would finally do a soulless romance, since everyone seems to think that that's the best sort of romance and the best writing in the game, and I'm not experiencing Dragon Age if I'm not an elf who romances soulless. So I started that up, and
how's that going?
It's going okay. It's actually going a lot better than my first Dragon Age playthrough.
Oh.
Yeah, my first playthrough, I had a sort of love-hate relationship with the game because I fell into a trap that I think a lot of people did, and that is that I stayed in the hinterlands for like 20 hours or something. Mm. So I just went around fighting bears and picking elf root and getting quests off dead bodies and things. So the pacing of the game.
Escorting Druffalo,
yep. So this time I left the hinterlands the first time before I even got horses. So mm-hmm. I left really fast. And another thing that I did the first time was that I bugged it out. You're not supposed to go to Redcliffe before you go to Valroyo. So the first time I bugged out the game. I rode my horse up to the gates of Redcliffe, and I was trying to get through the gates even though they were locked, and somehow I dismounted and ended up on the other side of the gates. So I saw the whole Redcliffe story before I ever went to Valroyo, which made things make a little less sense than they should have. Uh-huh. So this time I actually did things in the right order without bugging out the game. So that has helped, and not staying in the hinterlands forever has also helped progression. I also spent some time online on Reddit and such, because I don't really want to play the game like 12 times over, so I thought maybe I can get more bang for my buck, no pun intended. I read that you could romance Blackwall, who I actually found this time around.
Nice.
I read that you could romance him, and then when that doesn't work out, then you could romance Solas. And then, although I didn't see this confirmed, I heard that you could then romance Cullen. So I sort of considered doing this for a little bit, but I also really didn't want to break things and then not be able to romance Solas, which is my whole point for playing the game.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to just be very good. Like, at first I was just avoiding Cullen entirely, but I wanted to get his personal quest, and it's just like, don't press the flirt option.
It's so hard not to.
It's so hard. He's so charming. And Solas just disapproves of everything I do and say.
Oh, he's a bit of an ass.
Yeah. So, it's going okay. What did I do? I'm at Skyhold already, so I haven't done any of the big major quests after Skyhold yet, though. So it's going well. I'm enjoying it. I'm sort of speeding through it a little faster rather than trying to find every shard in every zone, so
yeah,
I'm liking it a little bit more.
That's good.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear what happens when you get to certain parts.
I know. I'm looking forward to that because as far as the romance goes, it's not really gone anywhere. I think I've had one flirt dialogue option with him. So
yeah, I think his like at first is a little less rewarding than all of the other ones because it kind of progresses a little slower.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you get to a certain, I think it's an approval level
or a
point in the game. It might be a point in the game. Then like you get a couple. Almost, it feels like it's, you know, one after the other almost.
All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. One thing that I don't like is that because I'm trying to do things differently this time around, I sided with the Templars.
Oh.
And I just feel like a giant train wreck. I'm this elf who's a mage, and I sided with the Templars, and later on I'm going to have to let the Chargers die because I want to see what happens then. So it's just a terrible playthrough all around other than Romancing Solas.
Letting the Chargers die is so... I did that in my first game.
Oh.
Or I think it was my first one. First or second. And yeah, it's pretty tough. And then there's some good bits at the end too that like really shocked me. So.
Hmm. I didn't load a particular save state. Like, I didn't do the keep before I started this playthrough. So, Hawk is a guy, which is super weird.
No.
Yeah, I don't like male Hawk. Female Hawk is much, much better. Although, at least I should be able to leave him in the fade easily.
Fucking see ya.
Oh, I'm a jerk.
Whatever.
Yeah. Other than that, I started a new playthrough that I'm doing a let's play of on my channel, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, which is a title that has way too much punctuation in it, but it's still a really good game. It's an action RPG about vampires where you play this sort of fledgling vampire. And it's really cool. It's got like all this lore and story and world building around it. And it also focuses a lot on dialogue, or at least things other than fighting to get things done. So you can like persuade people, and you can hack computers, and you can pick locks, and there's stealth. It's pretty cool. I like there's all these different dialogue options, and they even look different depending on what you're doing. Like if you're trying to like seduce someone into doing what you want, it's like this cursive purple font, and if you're trying to intimidate them, it's like this like angry red font, and it's pretty cool. And I'm liking playing that. The only problem with the game is that when it was originally released, it was rushed at the end because it was over budget and over time. So the attention to detail and like all the really good plotting and dialogue kind of decreases over time.
Oh no.
But the first two areas of the game are like some of my favorite things in gaming. So I'm excited to be playing again.
Cool. Yeah, I saw the YouTube video go up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never played that game, so.
Yeah, you should check it out if you're interested at all. I know it just got put on Good Old Games with a fan patch on it, so that it fixes a bunch of problems that were in the original release.
Oh.
So yeah, it's a really cool game, and I'm glad I started playing it. I was sort of weighing my options between two, and no one was helping me. Everyone was like, it was always 50-50 on what I should play. So, other than that, I started rewatching Firefly.
Yay! I love Firefly
too. I've been finding that a lot of people are sort of re-examining it and being like, "Oh, it's not that good." But I still think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I watched the Serenity again. Like maybe a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end I was like, maybe I should just watch Firefly again.
Yeah.
I like it. It's like fun, and sometimes it's silly, which is totally fine for, you know, futuristic space garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, I think It's fun. It sort of, like, makes me want to be a space cowboy.
Yeah.
I love all the characters, and it's always really funny. I know some people have some thoughts because Adam Baldwin has revealed himself to be a douche, but it doesn't really bother me in the context of a show. Like, I don't really care what actors do in their free time.
I mean,
in terms of, like, enjoying movies.
Yeah, and that's, like, his old stuff, too, so you can kind of pretend that he wasn't an asshole.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. The only thing that I'm finding has been bothering me is Mal's sort of obvious crush on Inara and hiding it by, like, calling her a whore and like that. I don't really like that. Especially, I mean, it's a problem with his character, and it's kind of a world-building problem since companions are supposed to be these super high-status people who you probably wouldn't talk about like that. Yeah. So that's really the only thing that's sort of been bothering me. Other than that, I think it still holds up really well, and it's a lot of fun. Darkest Dungeon. I started playing that again. It's a sort of a roguelike dungeon crawler that uses things like sanity. So your characters not only can take health damage, but they can also take stress damage, and they can get sick in the dungeons because dungeons are probably gross, dirty places. Mm-hmm. So I played this game a lot a while ago, and it got to the point where when I was getting to the hardest dungeons, they were just too hard, and I kept losing my characters, and I didn't want to have to level them all the way back up again in order to send a new group into the hard dungeons. But they introduced a patch where you could recruit new people that were at least sort of mid-level, so you didn't have to spend as much time. But I'm still finding that the hardest dungeons are just too hard. Like, I lose people, sometimes my whole party, every time I send them in. So I kind of got tired of that again. I don't know if I'm ever going to finish that because it's just so hard.
It's hard to, like, when you're losing stuff like that, there's no way to easily get it back.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because you put in so much work and so much time.
Yeah.
And then when you want to go back and try to get back into it, it's like, well, you have to do all of that over again.
Yeah, that's sort of why I generally avoid roguelikes, because the thought of, you know, repeating things doesn't really appeal to me. Like, sometimes you might get some kind of item or whatever, but a lot of the time it's just a matter of, like, oh, now you know a little bit better for next time, and that's not quite enough of a reward for me to keep going. So yeah, so I think I'm done with that again. Maybe I'll take another crack at it in a few months
before, like, after you forget.
Yeah, after I forget the frustration of it, I'll be like, oh, let's try this again. I never beat this. All right, that's it for me. What have you been up to?
I feel like all I have been doing is playing Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
I am still not as high level as some of the other people that I play with, but I have been playing it pretty much, it feels like, my every waking hour.
Really?
Yeah. and, like, playing it, like, till midnight, like on a weekday where I'm supposed to be getting up for work in the morning. But I don't know, there's just something about it that makes it easy to jump into, and it's really, really fun if you've got a bunch of friends to play it with.
Mm-hmm.
It makes losing a little easier if you, right, if you're losing, and it's fun because you, like, cheer each other on when you get, like, really good triple kills or something like that. So, yeah. Overwatch has been pretty much all I've been playing, with the exception of another Blizzard game, Hearthstone.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't, like, usually been into Hearthstone. I'm not really good at, you know, building my own decks and then actually playing against other people. But this week, their Tavern Brawl, they give you they give you a pre-made deck, so it's, and this week is all legendary cards. with some extra cards that make it so that they cost 3 less, so you can play that card and then have the legendary card earlier. And it's like you get, I don't know, it's like 5 different legendary cards and there's 4 copies. Okay. So you could play like 4 different legendary cards and then have like 4 other ones and then 4 other ones. So that's been pretty fun, mostly because it's like these ridiculous situations that would never ever happen. And I didn't have to build the deck, which was nice. But yeah, so I've been playing that a little bit. And I think I have like 28 wins for the period that that's been happening.
Okay.
Which, I don't know if that's a lot, but that seems pretty good to me. And then on Netflix, they added Bo Burnham's new special called Make Happy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, this young dude comedian who I remember listening to like his songs driving up to my cottage with my brothers like at least 5 to 10 years ago. So he's 25 now, so he was really young when he first like started putting out his videos on YouTube. And he's just like super clever with how he says things, and he's like he seems like he's really smart, and he like interjects a lot of like musical comedy into his show.
Okay.
And he did, one of his songs is called Straight White Male. And it's about like, you know, all the problems, with air quotes, all the problems that straight white dudes have.
Mm-hmm.
And I was laughing pretty hard because they're just ridiculous. Like, nobody holds the door open for him. That's one of the things.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, so I find him to be really funny, so I really enjoyed that.
I don't know if I've ever seen him. I like seen one of his specials. I think he was on Parks and Rec.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's where I know him from.
Yeah, he's got, I think 2 of his specials are up on Netflix right now. I think he's really funny. And he reminds me of my youngest brother.
Mm-hmm.
like super lanky and awkward and still really funny. Today I just got back from watching the Warcraft movie.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I liked it. But also didn't like it.
Yeah.
It's hard. I know that there will probably be people that disagree who loved it. With no exceptions. But it was just okay. There were some really cool parts, seeing Stormwind and Ironforge.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Seeing like the Great Forge and Ironforge, I thought that was awesome. Like the dwarves actually look really good, and I'm kind of sad that we didn't get to see more of them.
Yeah, me too. I wish there was more dwarves or more elves or more anything other than orcs and humans, really.
Yeah. And I know, like, they had to kind of pick a story to start from, and Orcs versus Humans is kind of, you know, that's, like, the first Warcraft game, I think. Orcs versus Humans? I don't know. I never played them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, I thought the dialogue was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But, like, it was a pretty movie. The CGI orcs all looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the costumes were pretty good, except for the weird armor that some of the Stormwind guards wore, like Lothar's armor, I thought was just weird.
Yeah.
But, like, the king's armor was really nice.
Yeah, I thought it looked good. I liked all the locations. And, yeah, the orcs I thought were really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Although I also found that the orcs were the only characters, like Draka and her husband.
Durotan.
Those were, like, I thought those were only characters that were built up well. Like, I sort of knew what they wanted and their motivations and their struggles, whereas a lot of the other characters, like most of the humans, I was just like, you've done nothing to make me invested in this character.
Yeah, yeah. They're just there.
Yeah.
I did really like Khadgar. Mm. And I think a lot of people did, too, because I've seen stuff on Tumblr that's like, my precious baby Khadgar. I don't like him in the game. I think he's an asshole. But I like him in the movie.
Is he the legendary?
Yeah. Okay. Well, and now he is, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think he was missing for a while and then came back in, like, Warlords.
Okay.
Maybe it's been a while. And it was, like, it was cool as a fan to watch it because you could pick out all of these little things. Like, Medivh had Atish, the legendary staff you can get, or you could get in, I think, Vanilla WoW.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was the Doomhammer and, you know, there was a, like, okay, so, like, small spoiler, but if you know the Warcraft story, it won't be a spoiler. Varian Rin was there. So that was cool. He was, like, small baby.
Oh, yeah.
Little child, Varian. before he turns into boring dad. like, just seeing everything from the game and, you know, having that all be on the big screen was really, I don't know, like, teared up a little bit seeing all of the cities.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, it didn't, like, strike me as much as I wanted it to. You know, I wanted it to be, a little more, but it was just kind of pretty things and, you know, really good CGI, but I don't know. It was just, eh. But yeah. If you're a fan, like, you know, go see it, because it's still, you know, you'll get a little more out of it than the average person that doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you play either the strategy games or World of Warcraft, then, you know, go see it. You'll get something out of it, although I don't think it's a particularly good movie. I think it's, you know, worth seeing once.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. But other than that, that is about it, because Overwatch has taken over my life.
who do you play most in Overwatch?
I kind of flip between a few different ones. So in the beta, I used to play a lot of Tracer, mm-hmm. but now it seems like everybody is very good at countering her, so I've started playing Pharah and mm-hmm. Torbjorn, the Swedish guy with the turrets.
Okay.
And then I kind of go, if we need to, I'll do D.Va or Azaria for my tank, and then mm-hmm. Mercy or Lucio, and then if we're defending, I'll go Symmetra for if we need a support. But there's a few, and then there's a couple that I'm just terrible at. Like, I'm not very good at sniping, so I don't usually play mm-hmm. Widowmaker or Hanzo. But yeah, there's a few that I'm, you know, that I think I'm pretty good at. So I just kind of, like, stick with those ones so that I don't embarrass myself by being really terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you find it takes a bit to get used to a new character, or is it pretty quick?
Yes and no. I have the benefit of having time played before the game actually came out. But if I need, like, if I am thinking about maybe trying a new character, I'll probably just take it into the practice range. Like, there's a mode you can go into, where it's all, like, target dummies, and then friendly dummies and offensive or enemy dummies, okay. And then you can, like, practice your character skills and see how they work in there, but, like, playing against actual people, it's a little more difficult, and kind of intimidating, because you're like, well, I'm gonna try this new guy. Oh, actually, there is occasionally a brawl in Overwatch, like, they do weekly brawls, kind of like Hearthstone does.
Oh, that's cool.
And the last one that's happened was every time you respawn, you switch to a new hero.
Mm-hmm.
So I like playing that. because you get a good, like, good diversity of heroes, and then nobody gets really mad at you if you're not very good because they're all being forced to switch every time you die.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's a pretty good way to learn, like, on the fly, if you don't die in, like, 3 seconds. But it takes a little bit of time just to get used to, like, knowing exactly what each character can do and who they're good against. Like, it helps to know the, for example, like, Bastion. I've seen so many people complaining about Bastion's overpowered, but he's actually pretty weak. There's lots of different ways to counter him. You can use D.Va because she has a defense matrix that goes in front of her and she shoots down all the projectiles that come towards her. So mm-hmm. you can use her and then have your team come behind you and shoot him. Or you can flank with Tracer. You can, like, get around and shoot him in the back because his vulnerable spot is actually, like, his little blue butt when he's in turret mode. So you just shoot that. Widowmaker is really good against him. Hanzo's not bad against him.
Mm-hmm.
Junkrat is really good because he can shoot his grenades. So, you know, once you learn kind of... Oh, Roadhog also, because he can hook him and pull him out of his turret form, mm-hmm. Which is good because Bastion seem to not expect that. But yeah, once you kind of get a feeling for what counters what hero on the enemy team,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can kind of gauge what you should be learning. So it's always good to have, like, 3 or 4 heroes, I think, that you're comfortable playing so you can swap if you need to. So if you're stuck on one, and you're just getting killed again and again because you're kind of playing, quote, the wrong character at the time, you know, you can switch easily. That's, like, you know, part of the core mechanic of Overwatch is to be able to switch
right.
Heroes to counter the other people. But yeah. I just love it a lot. I could talk forever about it.
Yes, we'll have to do an episode on it at some point. I'll have to play a little bit more. I feel like I would like it more if I got it on console because I just like controllers so much more, but yeah. I also feel like I would have no one to play with. So
yeah, I know a couple people that play on the PlayStation, but I don't know anybody that plays on the Xbox.
Yeah.
So it's hard. I'm surprised that it's on, like, well, I mean, maybe not surprised that it's on, like, 3 different platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Since, you know, like, an FPS team shooter seems perfect for consoles.
Yeah.
But it's hard because they're not linked, which would be, you know, difficult to do because console shooting versus PC shooting is different. So, I don't know. It's just hard because I know, like, my brother plays on PS4, so I can't play with him unless I buy it for my PS4.
Right.
And I'm not doing that.
Yeah, you don't want to have to pay for 2 copies. Another, like,
$80 or whatever.
Yeah, and then you don't have all your skins. And...
Exactly. How are people going to know how cool I am yeah. if I can't show off my skins?
Yeah, I was reading an article. Who was it by? Patricia Hernandez or Danielle Riando? I think Danielle Riando. One of them. And it was all about the loot boxes mm-hmm. in Overwatch and how they're designed to be, like, super fun to open. It's yeah. basically like the Hearthstone ones where it's just, like, flashy yeah. and, like, lights going and cool mm-hmm. noises, but most of the time you just get shit you don't want.
Yeah. Yeah. It's they did a good job with those. Like, you get them at a steady enough rate. You get one every level. So, you know, you get, like, every time you're playing, depending on how long you play, mm-hmm. I usually play so that I get one at least every time that I jump on. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, they have the option as well that you can buy them in, like, groups of 1, 5, 10, and 24, and then 50. I think it goes up to 50.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy them, and then you can just open up, like, 24 in a row. And I gave that exact number because that's the amount I bought.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely purchased a bunch. And, like, that, the point about them being fun to open is very true. They make, like, a great noise and the coins like come out and you get different colors. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get really cool stuff and sometimes you don't.
Yeah, it's how much is one?
I think they're a dollar? That might be wrong. Okay. I think 24 is $11.99 US.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's sort of a give and take, because, I mean, they're much cheaper. Like in, say, Heroes of the Storm, if you want a really cool skin, it's like $10 for the skin, but you know that you're going to get the skin that you want if you give them the money, whereas this is all basically luck-based, I guess.
Well, you can, if you get enough, like, in-game currency, you can buy the skin that you want directly. It just takes time to build up the amount of currency. Like, it's the higher-end skins with more detail are 1,000 coins. Mm-hmm. And if you play quite a bit, you know, you can rack up the coins pretty quickly and then spend on the exact skin that you want. But then, you know, you always run the risk that, you know, as soon as you buy the skin, Murphy's Law, it's going to pop up in your next loot box.
Right.
But every time you get duplicates, you get currency to spend instead. I think it's half the amount or something. So, I mean, they're good and they're bad and they're, like, really addicting to open. So it's hard not to buy them. I'm telling myself, don't buy any more because the amount that you see on the screen in Canada is not the same amount of money that pops up on your bill later. Like, paying more money.
Yeah, yeah, at least the exchange rate has gotten a little bit better, but still.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard, though. It's right there. It's so easy. You push the button to buy it. You enter in. Like, my payment info is already stored in there, so it's just like, do you want to buy this? Yes. And then it's like, here you go. Congratulations.
Yep.
It's too easy to buy them, but they know what they're doing.
Exactly.
All right. This week we asked around to see kind of if anybody had anything they wanted to hear us talk about. And one of the things that popped up was X-Men Apocalypse, because we've both seen that. And at the time it had just come out. So that is going to be the main topic of discussion tonight. First impressions for an X-Men movie, I went in with very low expectations. And it was probably good that I did, because I enjoyed it. But not as bad as the Warcraft movie left me feeling. But I don't know, I liked it. There were some parts that I wasn't really sure about. Like, I really wanted to see more of Jubilee, for example, because she was only at the school for a little bit of time. What did you think of Apocalypse himself?
I thought he was really silly. Like, first of all, I thought it was kind of a waste of Oscar Isaac to, like, cover up him up in, like, blue makeup and prosthetics. Because, you know, you want to see him when he's in things.
We want to see the space boyfriend.
Exactly. So I thought it was very strange. Like, starting just with the whole opening, I felt like it was, everything was really overdone. Like,
I liked the opening a lot.
I don't know. I thought it was okay. Like, I kind of liked the idea, although so many of the shots and things, it was just like, this is totally just made to look nice in 3D, which I guess is a valid thing since it's in 3D in the theaters. But
go away, 3D, please.
Please go away, yeah. I saw it in 3D just because that was what was playing then.
Yeah, me too.
But I found that the problem with Apocalypse was that the stakes were so high and he was so powerful and he could basically do anything he wanted that it was just became silly, basically. Like, the stakes were so high that they didn't even matter. Like, they basically show him like messing with gravity or whatever he's doing, crumbling buildings, and there's no sense of like, oh, he's killing people and doing bad things. It's just like this giant visual spectacle.
Just to flip back to the opening again, real quick. I So I get all of my X-Men information kind of secondhand from my boyfriend because I don't remember watching the show as a kid, and I don't read any of the comics. So, mm-hmm. You know, he was really excited and telling me about Apocalypse, and he's got, like, his Four Horsemen, which I thought was really cool. I almost wish that we spent more time in that time period mm-hmm. where he's like, you know, a god essentially, and mm-hmm. super powerful. Because we, like, obviously there's people that worship him, and there are people who, like, locked him away. So I kind of wanted, like, I wish that we got to see that conflict instead. Yeah. But then you couldn't really, you know, call it, you know, the X-Men movie because it wouldn't have the X-Men in it. And, like, the imagery of the Four Horsemen, like, flanking him as they go into the pyramid, mm-hmm. With, like, the same kind of golden headpieces that would be on the canopic jars. I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just, like, for someone, as somebody that doesn't know a lot about that universe, I kind of, like, wish that we had got a little more backstory on him than what we did.
Yeah, I think that would have been good, because I didn't totally understand him or his powers.
Yeah. I don't know, and then he, like, wakes up, and, like, Rose Byrne's character was wearing a burqa?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a little weird.
Yeah.
I can't really speak very well on that, but it, I don't know, it, like, stood out as something that was kind of strange to me.
Yeah, that whole scene was strange. I didn't remember her at all from the last movie.
Oh.
So I didn't know
it's because he does a dick thing to her.
Yeah.
It takes her memories away.
Yeah, so when she was, like, Indiana Jones there for a minute, I was like, oh, what am I watching?
What movie is this? Who is this woman?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I found it kind of weird because he just kind of, like, wakes up, finds out where he is, and, like, the first random mutant, he's like, I'll make you stronger. Like, I thought he was supposed to, like, search and find, like, the most powerful mutants, and he kind of just, you know,
first ones he sees, yeah.
Yeah, the first four people he kind of comes across, he's like, oh, yes, you'll do. I don't know. I shouldn't you maybe look a little harder for your most powerful dudes?
Yeah. I thought that, and I also thought that the three of them, at least, were pretty much wasted. What's her name? Psylocke and Storm and Angel.
Yeah.
Like, once he had them on his team, they mostly just, like, stood around posing and looking serious.
Yeah.
And I kind of giggled every time I saw them on screen.
Yeah, I find Angel to be really cool. He was in some other X-Men movie, and I don't remember which one. Last Stand. There we go. And, like, it's the same kind of thing where he's got these really cool huge wings, and he can fly everywhere, and it looks awesome, but then he just kind of gets shit on.
Yeah.
And they definitely could have done more with Psylocke. She was awesome, and then we, like, barely even saw any of what she could do.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we know Storm from previous movies, but, you know, get, like, her powers are really, really neat, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's, you know, Magneto, who is in everything all the time.
Yes. Yes. Just before we get to Magneto, the one thing I really liked about Apocalypse was that as part of his power, he was also ended up being this really awesome designer, and I liked that it showed him, like, shaping the armor on his new lackeys.
Oh, yeah.
I liked that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of time you think, where did they get this cool armor from? And it actually shows you, like, he's making it by
fashion
hand.
Fashion designer Apocalypse.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Angel's was really cool, and his wings, like, went all metal, and then he could, like, shoot the feathers out. That was cool. for Psylocke's costume, I actually heard that they had to, like, like grease her up to get her into that costume. Because
really?
Otherwise, it was, like, impossible. Mm-hmm. It was, like, skin-tight, like, latex almost.
Yeah.
So. But yeah. They did look cool.
Yeah. They looked neat.
So let's swing back to Magneto, because mm-hmm. we... he's a little different than what we've seen before in previous movies, where he's, like, he seems to be working as, you know, somebody that doesn't have powers. He's, like, got a job and mm-hmm. A family, and he lives in Austria or something.
I think he's in Poland.
Okay.
In Poland.
And then, you know, we get, like, another... origin type story for him again.
Yeah, he has an origin story.
Lily, I know.
The door got closed and she's sad. Yeah, he seems to have an origin story in every single X-Men movie from the first one in, when was it, the 90s, the end of the 90s or the 2000s or something.
Oh, God, was it that long ago?
I don't remember exactly when it was. It feels like it was a while ago. But yeah, he gets his origin story there, and then he gets more origin stories in sort of the reboot and First Class, and then here again, he needs another one showing how he loses more family and gets more angry and just like... I mean, from the moment his wife and child appeared on screen, like, you knew what was going to happen. Like, yeah. It wasn't going to end well.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, like, in the movie, like, in the theater, I was really, really angry about how that whole thing went down. So we kind of learned that his daughter has this power to communicate with animals, which seems mm-hmm. like a really rad, you know, superpower to have. Mm-hmm. And Magneto saves somebody at his workplace using his powers, and so somebody reports him to the local authorities, and they come to get him because of what he did mm-hmm. in the last movie. And then they take his daughter and kind of hold her hostage while he's, you know, forced to give himself up, and then she, it kind of mirrors what happened to him when he was in Auschwitz, like the same kind of shot with her hand extended and her powers kind of like taking over. Mm-hmm. And then the guards are so like distracted by all the birds flying around that the one with the bow and arrow, like, who has a bow and arrow? like, oh yeah, that's right. Yes. Okay. So because he's got the powers to control metal, that's why he has a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Doi. in the, and like, he gets so distracted that he shoots, like, lets the arrow loose, and it like goes through his daughter and into his wife, and it kills them both.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Made me really angry.
Yeah, I know. It's like, there was already so many things about Magneto, like about how he feels about mutants versus humans, that could have been used without just tossing in a wife and daughter to kill off. But it seems like they just went the super lazy, easy route and were like, oh, well, just give him a family and kill him again.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, it didn't even have to do that. All they would have had to do was, like, the wife and daughter don't even need to be in the movie for mm-hmm. that to be effective, because he's still getting reported to the local authorities. You know, they could have just come to his house mm-hmm. and like, asked him to come out. But then I guess, you know, he controls metal, so they wouldn't want to be near his house because he's probably got, like, metal in his house, like, with his cars and shit. But, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just thought it was lazy.
Yeah, for sure.
Stupid. And I guess, like, for other mutants, who did we see again? Oh, we saw, Quicksilver again?
Yeah, Quicksilver is the best part.
Yeah.
He was the best part of the last movie.
And yeah.
The best part of this movie.
He, like, the whole I don't know, like, everything that he can do is really cool. And, you know, when you see this Quicksilver and compare him to the Quicksilver that they used in the Avengers movie, the Ultron movie, and you see, like, what could have been in the Marvel Universe, it's really depressing because they completely wasted that character.
I totally forgot that it was Quicksilver.
Because he's so bad.
Yeah.
It's, like, not even worth remembering because it's such a terrible character.
Yeah.
But then in the X-Men movies, he's really cool. He's, like, this young, nerdy kid who, you know, as we learn, he's Magneto's son. And then there's a sighting of Magneto, so he wants to find him. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, by the time he gets to his destination, there's something blowing up, as usual.
Yep.
For that, for Xavier's school. And he, like, runs in there and saves everybody by, like, running around and speeding around and taking them out. Yeah, I thought that whole sequence was great. Like, the curtains being thrown out on the trees, and then they would catch the kids later, and he, like, shoves somebody inside of a rolled-up mattress, and they land on the mattress.
He gives the fishbowl to someone to take. Everything with him is just, like, super stylish. And what is it? Is it the Eurythmics playing?
Sweet Dreams?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything about Quicksilver's character is pretty cool. So yeah. I like seeing him.
And then, you know, because it's, like, the past version of previous hero, like, previous X-Men that we've seen, there's Cyclops, and this time we actually see Nightcrawler, which was cool, because I think the last time we saw him was the one where they were in New York. I don't remember the name of it.
Yeah, I think that was, I really like seeing Nightcrawler in this one, because I remember in X2, seeing that in the theater, and the very first scene was Nightcrawler in the White House, and he's just, like, teleporting all around with these puffs of blue smoke, and it just blew my mind at the time. So when they threw him in the ring with Angel and he was just teleporting all around, I was really excited to see him.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really good. And he was funny.
Yeah.
They're trying to explain what a mall was to him, and he's like, I want to see this mall. Yeah. And Jean Grey, the, like, younger version of her, she was in this one too. I actually liked the way she was played in this one.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm not really sure what they're, like, how they're gonna explain Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, it seems like the third movie of the first trilogy, and then now this one, it just, like, keeps hinting at the Phoenix and the Dark Phoenix storylines, but I don't know if it's ever actually gonna go there, and I wish that it would, because it seems like it would be pretty cool, and I want to see Jean Grey, like, letting loose her powers.
Yeah.
Although, hopefully not killing everyone like she did in Last Stand or whatever it was.
Yeah, that'd be good. I don't know. Like, I was trying to figure out how they were trying to set that up, because, like, she's supposed to be, like, fighting it for, you know, a long time, like, keeping it under wraps. And then in this one, it's like, Xavier's just like, do it. Like, it's fine. It'll be okay. And then it happens. And then she's just, like, normal. Like, she seems totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm interested to see how they're gonna, you know, go ahead with that storyline, if they even do. I don't know what they have planned, if they're gonna do another one.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they sort of, I don't know, if they sort of stuck with the trilogy thing and sort of went in a different direction for the next movie.
I wonder what they would do. Like, what is there something that you're hoping to see if they do another, like, set?
I don't know.
Keep bringing Hugh Jackman back as he gets older and older?
I think they probably can and will. Yeah. It would be cool to see a Jean-focused movie, But yeah, I put in the show notes an article by, I think it was Maddie Myers, on the Mary Sue, talking about Hollywood's infinite chances for middle-aged male superheroes, and how Wolverine has been in, I think, all six actual X-Men movies, plus his own spin-offs, and he's always played by Hugh Jackman. And I know that Wolverine, I don't think Wolverine ages.
But
Hugh Jackman does age.
Like, yeah.
He has gotten older in the past 20 years. So
it was kind of like painfully obvious in this one, I found.
Because yeah.
I was like, wow, you look old.
Especially since this is supposed to be, you know, so much earlier than
yeah.
the previous movies. But they just keep having Hugh Jackman back to play Wolverine, despite the fact that he's like 47 now. Mm-hmm. And it was just an interesting article about how, you know, Hugh Jackman's 47, Iron Man is 51, the Hulk is 48, and all the girls, or the women in the movie, just keep getting younger. Like Scarlett Johansson, she's only 31, and Elizabeth Olsen is only 27. Wow. Famke Janssen, who's amazing and gorgeous, is mm-hmm. no longer in the X-Men movies, whereas Hugh Jackman is still in all of them. So, yeah, it's kind of sad that once you're past a certain point, you don't get to be a superhero anymore
yeah.
if you're a woman.
That's so dumb and annoying. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'll do another trilogy, because at the end of this one, they alluded to Mr. Sinister, you know, kind of being behind this, like, the X-23 experiments.
Oh, yeah, I didn't stay for the after credits thing. Mm.
Yeah, it was, like, really brief. And I wasn't even sure if there was going to be something after the credits, because I couldn't remember if the X-Men movies did that. But yeah, there was a group, somebody came in holding like a suitcase that was labeled Essex, which I believe is his company.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's his last name. you know, and he's holding this briefcase, and he comes to get the serum that was used to make Wolverine like what he is with the adamantium.
Okay.
And takes that and puts it in the suitcase, and there are like a bunch of other different colored vials, and then, you know, takes the suitcase and leaves. So I think that they might like go directly in that direction after this one, although it would be nice to see something that is not Wolverine focused, where Wolverine comes in and he's there again. Although
yeah.
I mean, he's like one of the main X-Men, so of course he's there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, give the other people a chance to shine, because they have way cooler powers than you do.
Yeah. Put Wolverine in the next Deadpool, and then...
Yes. That would be okay with me. That's yeah. totally fine. Just yeah, more like superhero movies that are like Deadpool, please.
Yes. Yes, that would be good. So other than that, I thought the movie was all right. I thought the stuff with the good X-Men was a lot more enjoyable than the stuff with the villains, because the villains just weren't very fleshed out, or they were fleshed out in stupid ways.
Yeah. Oh, I know, something that was kind of cool was them showing how Professor X loses all of his hair, and I don't know if that's like the way that it happens, you know, in the comic books. Mm-hmm. But I thought it gave a good in movie universe explanation as to why he would be bald. Without him being like, well, I just decided to shave off my hair today.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was cool, where it was like, you know, him trying to fight off Apocalypse in his mind. I don't know, like, Apocalypse just seemed like this impossible villain to beat, and then suddenly he's not super powerful anymore.
Yeah, well, I guess that was because of Jean and how powerful she is.
That's true.
But I did. I liked the beginning of the scene with Apocalypse and Xavier, like, in his head. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But then Apocalypse just kept getting bigger.
Yeah, apparently that's what he does in the comics, is he, like, just becomes, but in, like, real life, not in his mind. Okay. It's actually a thing that he can do. Uh-huh. But the dialogue in that particular section was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because Xavier was like, not in my house. It's like, please, sit down.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it could have used some more work and explanation. Even, like, one of the first big things that Apocalypse does is basically disarm everyone. Like, he takes all the nukes and puts them in space.
That was cool,
and
though.
I was like, that's okay. Yeah. Like, do it. Go for it.
That is a good thing to happen.
Like, yeah.
Get rid of them. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like there was a lot more potential for that storyline to go on longer. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe spread it out over a couple movies. Not that I want to give them any ideas for extending their stories. But I don't know. And I guess, like, the way that that kind of ended, it seems like Psylocke is still gonna be against the X-Men, because she kind of, like, left mysteriously. Glaring as she walked away.
Did leave mysteriously. The whole ending bit where the three of them are just, like, Angel and Storm and maybe Psylocke, were just like, yeah, we're not with you anymore.
Yeah.
And then they help the X-Men. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So, it's funny because we haven't even talked about Mystique, even though she was pretty much in this movie the entire time.
Yes.
And I kind of find her to be boring.
Boring,
yes. I find that Jennifer Lawrence kind of plays the same character in all of her action movies.
She totally does. Oh. This was no different than Katniss.
Yeah, like the reluctant hero who, like, takes up the fight, and then she, you know.
And doesn't change her tone of voice.
No. It's, like, super monotone. In this one in particular. I don't know. It's hard to, like, really, I don't know, like, put the words behind it, because it's just, like, it's more like, what's the word? I can't even think of the word now. She just seems, like, so passive. Like,
yeah.
Even though she's supposed to be, you know, the hero, I guess. That's kind of what they're doing for her, but at the same time, she's just, like, boring. Even though she can turn into anything she wants to.
Yeah, I kind of liked her better in the first trilogy when she was bad.
Yeah.
Like, she seemed more interesting and to have more of a purpose. I mean, her purpose in the new ones is just to, like, sort of keep a leash on Magneto or to talk Magneto down. So, I don't know. I kind of, like, would rather just see her a little bit further into where she sort of goes on his side for good. But, she's just not that interesting.
No. I think you're right where she was more interesting previously. And now, in these ones, like, the new trilogy, it's just kind of like, could do without her, I think.
Yeah, or although, at least write her better.
Yeah, like, definitely write her better. I don't know. Like, she just... Yeah. I don't know if there's much more to say, because she's just, like, she's just there, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Poor Mystique.
Yeah. All right, so now we'll go on to some questions that we got from Twitter, as well as a couple in email. I'll start with the ones that are specifically about X-Men. The first one is from the Donovan Viper. Who's better, Charles Xavier or Jean-Luc Picard?
So I am going to say something that's going to disappoint some of my friends.
You've never seen Star Trek?
No. I remember watching like some of it because my mom would watch it, but that was like a long time ago. So I have never actually sat down and watched any of the old Star Trek. So that, I feel like that is not a question that I can answer.
All right. For me, it's hard because Charles Xavier is cool and he can read people's minds and psychically control people, which is neat. Jean-Luc Picard face palms more and is more gif-able, I guess. but I'm going to say Charles Xavier, I think. I watched some of Star Trek The Next Generation. I watched the first few seasons, but I've never really been a huge Star Trek fan myself, so I'd go with Charles Xavier.
Are we talking about the same actor too? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
They're both.
Yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart.
All right. Our next question that we have is from Angry Canadian Decepticon from Twitter. Do you feel that Days of Future Past was part of hitting a big reset button on the X-Men universe? I would say yeah. Especially because they can bring in younger people to play the same X-Men that they had in the last one. Which, you know, that's like a Hollywood problem where they're bringing in younger people to play the exact same characters because, you know, as soon as, like what we were talking about earlier with Famke not being in this new one, you know, it's, you know, like, it, they make it seem like your age stops you from doing the work that you have been doing for a good part of your life, so now they have the excuse to bring in the younger actors and actresses and put them on a new one. And then I guess also tell different stories.
Yeah, I think the reset sort of started with First Class more so than Days of Future Past. Because Days of Future Past did bring in at least a few of the older,
I think
Patrick Stewart and Wolverine, of course.
Yep,
were in it. I don't remember. Were there other people? Was Magneto?
Ian McKellen.
Yeah,
he was in it too.
Yeah, so I think the reset button sort of started in First Class, so that they could reboot the whole thing and bring in younger women and the same old men.
That actually made me think of something from the end of the movie where they had the training room and like the Sentinels stepped out, so that's a whole other storyline that they could explore too.
Yeah, that's true.
Is the Sentinels, and like, although they kind of did that in Days of Future Past because I think those were supposed to be the Sentinels, so maybe not. I don't know, it's so confusing. I have no idea.
Yes. The next question is from Duke0619, also known as Retro Nonsense. Do you read X-Men comics or any comics? And if so, what is your favorite? My super short and boring answer is no, I don't read any comics ever at all.
That's okay. We're both allowed one.
Yeah.
I don't read any X-Men comics. I don't think I have ever read a single one. But I do read some Marvel comics. So the new Thor, which I think everybody should read because it's fantastic. And the artwork in it is incredible. Like the artist, Russell Dodderman, like the way that he draws Thor and the previous Thor, who is now, he now goes by Odinson, like he draws them so well, and the, like, everything just looks amazing. It's like good to read and also really good to look at. And I did read, but I don't think I'm still reading it anymore, is the new A-Force run, which is all women Marvel superheroes in a group together.
Oh, that's
like
cool.
Fighting crime and stuff, so it's kind of cool to see them all like interacting with each other. And then they started another run of Civil War, which is Civil War II, and it's Captain Marvel against Iron Man. So I read the first one of that. But other than that, I don't... I mean, I read, like, Saga. I was reading that as well. So, I mean, you know, there's a few things, but not any X-Men comics. And I don't... It doesn't really interest me, so I don't know if I ever will. But definitely my favorite is Thor, for sure.
Awesome.
So our next question is from Buried on Mars. If you could have one of the X-Men's powers, which would you choose? That's kind of a tough one.
I'd probably pick Charles Xavier, since he's so powerful and can do lots of mind things. I'd say Jean Grey, but she's also super volatile, so I'd go with the, yeah. the ones that are a little That's bit more a bit under dangerous. Control.
Yeah. My first answer would be to say, so she's not in the movies, but Scarlet Witch is technically in the X-Men comics first, I think. I would like to have her powers because she's super powerful and she can like conjure whatever the heck she wants. But like if I had to pick one from maybe the movie or like... you know, current X-Men stuff, I would probably also go with Charles Xavier. even though I don't know, like, how well that would go, because he can, like, hear everybody's thoughts, like, all the time.
Yeah.
So it seems like that might be a little uncomfortable, but...
True.
He's also, like, super powerful, so...
Yeah.
I mean, self-healing would be rad, too.
Yeah.
There's too many.
Yeah, we have lots of good ones. I mean, Mystique's a good one,
too, oh, yeah.
I think. But
yeah.
Okay, so the next one comes from Musty Hobbit, who has a hypothetical question. BioWare has just secured the rights to make an X-Men game. Party of three. Who would you bring to the fight?
The real question is who would you romance?
Yeah, that is the real question.
I would probably bring Magneto and probably Charles Xavier again. And then for the last one, I don't know. Probably somebody that could, like, fly or Nightcrawler.
Ah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I take Jean and Juggernaut.
Oh, yeah.
I just had the third one in my head and now it's gone.
Yeah.
Maybe Magneto because there's generally guns around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Magneto. Who would you romance?
Who would I romance him? Does it have to be in that party? It would be somebody different.
It could be someone different. Oh, Quicksilver, that's what I was going to say. Not Magneto. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. Probably... Angel. It's the wings.
yeah, I think I'd probably go with Jean. Like first movies Jean.
Yeah. I can see that. The next couple of questions that we have aren't X-Men related, so I hope you all enjoyed our X-Men talk.
Yes.
So this next question has a little bit of a message in it too, so I'll just read it out. Greetings, Pam and Riley. I just had a question to ask you for your podcast. As I'm largely a retro gamer these days, part of what I love about the hobby is hearing people's origin stories. What are some of your nostalgic memories in gaming, and how have they helped establish your gaming today? Wishing you continued success on your podcast. All the best, Paul, the Cartridge Canuck from the Leftover Bits podcast. Thank you. That was really nice. Nostalgic memories in gaming. A lot of what I remember is playing somebody else's Sega Genesis in their basement. Because we didn't really ever have a system until we got the PlayStation 1. So I played a lot of like Sonic the Hedgehog and Echo the Dolphin. With my brothers. And then once we got the PlayStation 1, my uncle lent me the very first Tomb Raider game. So I played that. So I feel like, you know, having Lara Croft as like a heroine to look up to in like the first game that I played largely by myself, has probably influenced, you know, the kind of games that I like. I definitely like having, you know, a strong woman character to head up the story and to, you know, be the one that gets shit done. Like playing games with my brothers, you know, I definitely play a lot of, you know, games with my friends. I played World of Warcraft for friggin' 7 years. Like now with Overwatch, I'm playing that with friends too. So, you know, games with friends and, you know, being able to share, with them, you know, the joy of the games that we all like together, is probably, you know, what I've picked up most from playing games from a young age.
So my nostalgic memories, I actually just made a video about my 5 most nostalgic games a little while ago. But one of my memories I have was when I was young, like maybe 7 or 8, and I first got my NES. And I remember I really wanted an NES, and I don't remember if it was my birthday or Christmas, but I snooped around my house and I found an NES in the closet, and it wasn't wrapped.
Oh, so no.
I spoiled myself and I found the NES. And at that time I had a neighbor whose name was Wade, and I think he was a year younger than me, and he had a Nintendo too. So we always used to like go over to each other's houses and play. We'd play Mario 1, Duck Hunt, Mario 3, Felix the Cat, which is a game that I was always renting. And I remember once I finally, like, my mom bought me a copy of Felix the Cat, and I ran over to his house to be like, look what I got, look what I got. And his birthday had just passed, and he's like, I got a Super Nintendo. And I was like, oh. Because then he didn't want to play my Felix the Cat, he wanted to play on his Super Nintendo. So I was always like a little bit behind in terms of consoles, and then even after that, like you, I didn't have anything until the PlayStation 1, mm-hmm. after my NES. So a lot of my memories after that are about PC games, especially sort of point-and-click adventures and things like that. But I don't have those same kind of memories about playing with other people because they'd get cooler things than me.
Oh. Yeah, I guess... you're an only child, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, having two younger brothers to play video games with was, you know, something that I did a lot. Mm-hmm. And like we all got like Pokemon all at the same time, so mm-hmm. you know, play Pokemon together and trade Pokemon and then like battle each other. Because at the time there were like red, blue, and yellow.
Right.
So I had yellow, and then each of my brothers had red and blue, and so we all had a different version and like played like kind of together and like compared Pokemon and stuff, you know. And then of course like they like their friends had cool stuff too, so they would like go play with their friends. But yeah, I just like, you know, remember a lot of playing in the basement of somebody else's house mm-hmm. and being like, I want one of these, but then never getting one until a little later. But yeah, I don't know, gaming's always been like a communal thing.
Yeah.
For me, so. And that's what I like about it. Making friends.
All right. The next question is from Kino, also known as LifeSpiller79 on YouTube. And he wants to know about the equipment we use to record the podcast, like our microphones and software, etc. So I use a Blue Snowball, and we record the show in Audacity. We both record separate tracks, and then whoever happens to be editing that week combines them and edits the podcast in Audacity.
Mm-hmm. And I use a Blue Yeti to record, and that is only because Boxing Day rolled around and one of my friends works at Best Buy, so I got a really good deal after I returned my Blue Nessie for not working. So yeah, I got a super good deal.
Does the Yeti have a mute button?
It does, yep.
I want a mute button since my dog.
Yeah, there's a nice big red mute button. And then when you push it, it flashes to let you know that you're muted.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really nice. It's got, okay, so I'm going to turn it around. You can turn up or turn down the gain. You know, depending on like what kind of noise is around or how close you are to the microphone. And then there's four different settings. One of them will record just in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the modes will record in front of it and behind it. So if you're talking across the table to someone, you could record that way. Or there's the third mode is it records 360 degrees all the way around it. So if you're in a big group setting, you could just set the mic in the middle. And then the last one is, instead of being the front and the back of the mic, it's side to side. So, you know, they recommend, I think, that one in particular for if you're singing harmonies with somebody, one person's harmonies go on one side and the other person's go on the other, and then you record in stereo and you can see the two different tracks. Something like that. Cool. But yeah, it's really nice. and I wouldn't have started with this kind of mic if I didn't get the deal on it that I did, because it's a pretty pricey microphone, unless you're doing something with it all the time. You know, I would feel guilty about having something like this if I wasn't using it for a podcast, but that's not to say that you can't treat yourself and get yourself a really good microphone for just whatever you want to do. But yeah, I have had no problems with it. I love it.
Awesome. Yeah, I'd like to upgrade to that one at some point, I think.
It's really nice. yeah, I find like all the Blue microphones, if you're looking for a good starter microphone, like the Snowball is a good one. Even the Nessie that I had, although mine, something happened with the drivers in mine and I couldn't update it no matter what, and the tech support even couldn't help me, so they just recommended returning it, and then that's what I did, and then I used the difference on that to get this one. So, and our last question is from, I hope I pronounced your last name right, I'm sorry, Stephen Eider on Twitter, and he's asking, if you could bring any one Game of Thrones character back to life, which would it be and why?
I was trying to think about this, and I want to bring Sean Bean back to life, but not Ned Stark, because he's stupid.
Ned Stark is too naive.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know. I almost want to say Robb Stark, so he can see, you know, all the shit that he fucked up. But I don't know. Like, even in the books, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of someone who's died who I like.
I mean, yeah, okay, so big TV Game of Thrones spoiler here. If you're not caught up on the current season, stop listening right now. So they already brought back Jon Snow, and that is who I would have said if he were not resurrected. But that's kind of a cop-out answer.
Oh, I know my answer, except it's like four answers, not one answer. I want all the friggin' dire wolves back.
Oh.
Or at least one of the dire, at least like Lady or something. Like, yeah. Stop killing the dire wolves. Bring them back.
Who's, which ones are even left?
Nymeria, maybe.
And Ghost?
In the wild somewhere. And Ghost, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Brand direwolf would be a good one to bring back. Also, you know, Osha.
Oh,
she got a raw deal.
She did get a raw deal. That was a bad death.
Yeah. Yeah. That's who I'm going to go with. Because I would have liked to see more happen for her. So that she could protect Rickon, because I'm so worried for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready for Bolton to, or what's his name? Ramsay Snow to
be like, gone.
Forever? Fall off a cliff or something, yeah.
Yeah, he's, I really hope
I'm done with him.
that the like Sansa and Jon can get their shit together and take Winterfell back.
Yeah. And because, spring him up.
Yeah. I'm sick of him. Because he's gross and I don't like him.
All right. I think that's it for the questions. Thank you, everyone, who tweeted at us or emailed us.
Yeah, lots of really good ones.
Mm-hmm. All right. Where can people contact you if they want to find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kaleri with an underscore. That's K-A-L-E-R-I underscore. And yourself?
You can find me on Twitter at Jasyla underscore. That's J-A-S-Y-L-A underscore. And you can find me on YouTube at Cannot Be Tamed.
So that'll end up the show for us tonight. If you have any feedback, questions, people, or topics you'd like to hear on future episodes of the show, you can reach out to us at MediaMavensCast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at underscore MediaMavens. And if you like the show, please leave us some reviews on iTunes or Stitcher.
Yes, we like reviews.
We do.
Thank you to everyone who's given them already. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.